The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Web Studio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder why a loving God wouldn't make himself known, at least better known than he seems to have. Oh, sure, Christians claim that the Bible is the Word of God, but any discussion of the Bible leads to nothing but confusion. Who decided which books go into the Bible? What about the books that were left out, like this new Gospel of Judas that everybody's talking about, or others that we've known about for a longer time, the Gospel of Thomas, the Gospel of Philip, the Gospel of Mary, and now, to make things even more confusing, there's this movie you've heard about called The Da Vinci Code, which refers to some of these omitted Gospels and teaches all kinds of weird things about Jesus. Was Jesus married to Mary Magdalene? Was this marriage a horrible but honest truth that embarrassed the Catholic Church? Did they try to keep it a secret over the years, a secret exposed only through The Da Vinci Code? Well, we have an expert on The Da Vinci Code with us today. No, I do not mean Dan Brown, the author of the novel being the operative word, fiction being another key word for this discussion. No, today's guest is an actual historian, and boy, do you need the light of genuine history when you read The Da Vinci Code, but it doesn't take a cracked code to recognize the unhidden charm of my co-host. Say hello to Sharon Couchard.
Hi, Bob. It's great to be here, and I'm very excited about this interview. We did touch on this a couple of years ago.
A couple of years ago, when we were hosting a different program on KPRZ, we talked about the novel, The Da Vinci Code. As an artist, I give it an A+, very well-written book. But the guy doesn't know New Testament history from Shinola. And now that the movie's coming out, this is going to be huge. I mean, directed by Ron Howard, starring Tom Hanks. This is just going to be the hugest stuff on the planet.
Well, this will be a great window for us once again as Christians to shed some light on the truth of it. Our guest today that I get to introduce is Pastor Jim Garlow of Skyline Wesleyan Church in La Mesa, California. And in addition, he's a historian, wrote many books on history and Christianity, like God and His People and A Christian Response to Islam. But we're most interested today in his books, Cracking the Da Vinci Code and The Da Vinci Code Breaker. Before we begin, Pastor Jim, could you just give us a brief premise of what The Da Vinci Code is about?
It's a murder mystery, and it starts with the curator in the Louvre Museum being found murdered. A man happens to be in town from Harvard, in town that is, in Paris, all the way from Harvard University. He is a religious symbiologist. There is no such department in real life at Harvard. But so Robert Langdon is there, and he's asked to come over and to identify what clues were left on the body that might give some indication of why this man was murdered. And joining him is a young female police cryptographer, and she turns out to be the granddaughter of the murdered man. Now, the murdered man was a part of what's called the Priory of Sion, according to Dan Brown's novel, that was started in the Middle Ages with a group of grandmasters. They had secrets about Christianity, a specific secret about Christianity. If that secret ever got out, it would destroy Christianity. And so the Roman Catholic Church in particular was trying to keep that secret from getting out, and they murdered this man.
Okay. And one of the secrets is that Jesus married Mary Magdalene, and she was the Holy Grail, and she carried Jesus' bloodline, right?
That's correct. And they continued on in the south of France, and from there a king line came from Mary and from this daughter, Sarah.
So if somebody watched Monty Python's Holy Grail, I'm guessing that would be a little bit different of a story than The Da Vinci Code.
It's a much different definition
different
of,
kind of
Holy
Grail.
Yes.
Okay. The Holy Grail is actually Mary, and this would destroy Christianity if it got out.
Yes.
Now, it's interesting because I know you're a Protestant pastor, and I'm a Protestant minister, so obviously there are things about the Catholic Church that we don't accept. But would you agree that in this particular case, the poor Catholic Church is getting kind of a bum rap?
Oh, he bashes the Roman Catholic Church, blames them on things they never even thought of. there's a number of things in Rome, there in the Roman Catholic Church in the Middle Ages we cannot defend, and we certainly that's why we're Protestants. But the fact is, he says, well, the Vatican did such and such in the 4th century. Well, the Vatican didn't exist in the 4th century. And so all kinds of accusations against, particularly the Opus Dei organization, no foundation at all to that.
Jim, I attended your seminar last week that you did for pastors. It was just excellent. It was superb, not only the humility, but your knowledge. And what I particularly found interesting and particularly appreciated was that you were encouraging the pastors to encourage their people to see this. I'm sure there's pastors all over the country that are saying, don't go to this movie. If you spend this money, you're giving to the cause. What was your reason for encouraging the pastors to encourage their congregations to see this movie?
I do say that if the Holy Spirit directs a person not to go, they shouldn't go. Don't go by me. Go by what God's speaking to the human heart. And so there's some cases where people maybe feel directed not to go. I don't think a boycott is the most effective for the kingdom on this one. I think there's right times to boycott, and I would support boycotts at various points. I just don't think this is one of them. I think this one, unlike any other, gives much more opportunity to us if we participate in it than if we do not. I've been asked more questions about the nature of Jesus, who he is and who he was, and about how the New Testament came together in the last 2 years and the previous 20, all thanks to Dan Brown's The Da Vinci Code. And what I want to do is see replicated across America in every church people who understand this so they can get in conversations. I don't want to overstate that everybody's going to get saved by seeing the movie evangelistically, but I do think pre-evangelism, that is the opening of conversations, will take place. And then one other thing that Dan Brown has done as a service to the church, he's going to force a lot of believers to know much more realistically why they believe in the divinity of Christ and why they believe in the authenticity of the New Testament. And he's done us a great service at that point.
Yeah, very insightful. As a general rule, Jim, how equipped do you think believers in the church are today to defend Christianity against not only the academic assaults, but a lot of the not physical persecutions, but verbal persecutions about the alleged immorality of the Bible? The Bible's a book that promotes genocide. The Bible's a chauvinistic book. How equipped do you think believers are today to defend their faith as a general rule?
I give the contemporary church an F.
An F?
Yes. Without hesitation. And there's a reason for that.
I think I agree with you. If we had something lower than an F, I might have gone there. But that's probably as low of a grade we can
get. Well, I started to say a scale of 1 to 10. I was going to say a 1 or 2. and it's primarily because, quite candidly, some of the things are not, I don't hold individual Christians necessarily accountable for, but their own individual lives are so beat up. They're taking touch shots. There's brokenness of homes. There's decimation even economically. There's broken relationships. There's woundings emotionally. And so many believers are on survival mode. And so the thoughts of kind of boning up and knowing this topic of why should I be able to refute the Gospel of Judas is just so far out from the survival mode they're in.
Right.
Part of that's the cultural attacks upon marriages and homes and families.
Right.
And so part of that's I really am quick to defend the church at that point. There is another part, though, and that is the felt need consciousness. Preach to me about just my immediate felt needs. Now, there's a validity in preaching for those, and I think it's right to do that. But at some point, this is the uniqueness of Christianity in contrast to the other pagan religions out there, is we actually have something we believe. Pagan religions don't have any belief system. So we believe certain things. So consequently, we need to be able to defend those when those are attacked. And it's absolutely imperative that every believer understand how to defend the cardinal issues of the faith. That is so important. I'm not convinced the contemporary Christian in the U.S. is the least bit convinced of what I just said right there.
Yeah, and wouldn't it be the difference between what the Bible would call preaching and teaching? It seems that sometimes people teach from the pulpit and preach while they're giving a Bible study, but they're very different. Wouldn't preaching be, like you were saying, something devotional, something that provokes our relationship with God, our fellowship with each other, something that heals us emotional, whereas teaching would be the doctrines and the history and how to defend what we believe a little better.
I do think that's exactly right. You see, the Da Vinci Code's incredible impact upon the culture is a direct correlation to the failure of the church to establish in the heart of believers our own historicity. People say, well, people who are weak faith are going to walk from their faith because of the influence of the Da Vinci Code. I don't know if it's altogether weak faith. I think it's a weak understanding of church history. Mm-hmm. If they understood the basics, they would not buy into something of that nature.
Yeah, and along those lines, first century Palestine, what were some of the norms relative to marriage and rabbis and Pharisees? Was it common for rabbis and Pharisees not to be married?
You're asking that question because of Dan Brown's mm-hmm. claim that Jesus had to have been married or he wouldn't have been a self-respecting Jewish person.
Exactly.
Well, certainly we have evidence from the Dead Sea Scrolls, which were found in 1947, which take us back to that period intertestamentally between the Old and New Testament, the group called the Essenes, and they were all celibate. They were single persons, which is completely contrary. And Dan Brown even refers in the Da Vinci Code to the Dead Sea Scrolls and says it tells us all about Christianity and Jesus. It doesn't say a word about Christianity and Jesus. The Dead Sea Scrolls were about ancient Judaism. And so they give us some information that's very important that actually refutes Dan Brown's notion that Jesus had to have been married.
Well, it's interesting how people cherry pick, because we find documents like the Dead Sea Scrolls, but people interpret it for their own agenda. But we have no agenda here. We will be back. Our very special guest, pastor and historian Jim Garlow. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ, San Diego.
Admit it, to be successful these days, you need a website. And if you don't have one, you'll be like my friend Arnold, who finally switched from a manual to an electric typewriter when everyone else already had a personal computer. And the day I tried to talk him into a website, just listen in.
Forget it, too expensive.
Then how are you going to market your company? People need information.
There's still a device called a telephone.
Telephone? You're talking like Fred Flintstone. How are they going to see your logo, your graphics and pictures, your store?
There's a lovely brochure that we send out.
Have you any idea how much money you spend every year to print these brochures?
Yeah, right. How about the cost of having your website hosted? Not to mention the time, the complicated software, the hiring of a designer.
All of those difficulties are removed when you use Web Studio.
That name sounds familiar.
Web Studio is a website design software. It enables you to create your own pages in minutes without hiring a designer. All you do is use your mouse to drag and drop images and text. Then it saves the pages for you on the internet. The program includes 14 design galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and anything else you need.
I didn't know it could be so easy and quick. Maybe it is time for me to step into the 20th century.
Arnold, it's the 21st century. For information on Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
You have probably heard of the KISS system, K-I-S-S, Keep It Super Simple. Hi, how in the world are you anyway? This is Andy Willoughby presenting the simple three-step plan home business system. I really think that the main reason the three-step plan has been able to help so many people build a business working from home is because of its simplicity. If you have a telephone, internet access, and some good old stick-to-itiveness, you can make more money working from home. For information, go to threestepplan.com or call 800-305-5482. Our turnkey system will give you everything you need to be successful. Many three-step plan members are now in the top 2% of income earners in the nation, and they did it working from home. If you want a better financial future and think you might appreciate the freedom of working from home, we invite you to check out the three-step plan. Go to threestepplan.com or call 800-305-5482.
News Talk 1170 KCBQ.
Welcome back to our program here at KCBQ 1170. This is Bob Siegel and Sharon Couchard. We're so honored today to have Jim Garlow, the pastor of the very well-known Skyline Church, but he's a historian who's written several books about a lot of subjects, not the least of which the infamous Da Vinci Code.
And we were just talking about the Essene sect of Judaism. And Pastor Garlow, would you revisit that point that you were making there?
Well, simply once again, Dan Brown makes the claim that Jesus had to have been married. No self-respecting Jew would have been single. And yet what we find from the Dead Sea Scrolls themselves is there were groups within Judaism, they were referred to as the Essenes. They occupied caves, ironically, along the Dead Sea area, the Qumran Caves. Thus, they're called the Dead Sea Scrolls. The writings were found. And it indicates, in fact, that there were many, many people who were very respected in the part of the Jewish community who were single. Mm-hmm. And Jesus could have very clearly have been single and still have been respected, in contrast to what Dan Brown claimed.
Mm-hmm. In 1 Corinthians, Paul talks about the rights of apostles in 1 Corinthians 9, 4 and 5. And he says, doesn't Barnabas and I have the right to take a believing wife like the other apostles do and the Lord's brothers and Peter. Now, if Jesus was married, wouldn't he have said, doesn't Barnabas and I have the right to take a believing wife like Jesus?
I think he would have, but I would have gone even further than that. Not only that passage, but nowhere in the New Testament does it claim Jesus was married. Nowhere in any writings of any of the early church fathers. And here's the irony. Nowhere, even in the Gnostic writings, nowhere, which Dan Brown is so enamored with, does it make the claim that Jesus was married.
Okay, but all right, let's go to the Gnostic Gospels then. Is it the Gospel of Judas, excuse me, or the Gospel of Mary Magdalene?
The Gospel of Philip is the one that he builds his case on.
And what is it that he's building his case on?
He builds his case on the passage that says that Jesus was a companion to Mary, and he kissed her on the lips. He kissed her often on the lips and favored her among the other disciples.
And that kind of open kissing was very keen to that culture, wasn't it? That didn't necessarily mean a sexual kiss.
We're talking about the Eastern culture here. Number one, it doesn't say the word even often in there, nor does it say the word lips. It says it in Dan Brown's. An editor supplied that. The actual document, which was found in 1945, translated in English in 1977, the actual document is torn there. It's fragmented. And so the editor supplied the word lips. Jesus kissed Mary on, could have been forehead, could have been cheek, could have been on the hand. But the Middle Easterners were very accustomed, and still are, to the greeting of each other with a holy kiss. It even says that in our New Testament. And the reason we know it's not a sexualized kind of kiss, because it has this is written in the Coptic language, but there's a loan word from the Greek word at this point, from the Greek language, the word equivalent of koinonia, which has the meaning of fellowship, like we would have. It was a liturgical kind of greeting, like greeting one another with a handshake in our churches, or a kiss if you were in the Middle East. It has nothing to do with sexualized content. And Dan Brown takes the word companion, jumps from the word companion, and says, aha, that must have meant they were married. Mm-hmm. And had a child.
Mm-hmm. And word studies are so key to this. We're going to end up confusing people with the facts here. But facts is, I mean, don't they do the same thing? There's this theory that was around for years that Jesus and John were gay lovers. But what people don't realize is there were different Greek words for love. They were using the word agape when John was the disciple whom Jesus loved. There was another word, eros, that would have been used if that's what they were trying to say. So really getting back and studying what these words actually meant in their context, that's very key to this.
The most classic example of that right there, which to me is one of the most offensive in terms of people distorting the scripture, is the Jonathan and David story, where in this story they remove their belts, and some homosexual groups have the audacity to assume that it's a homosexual. They do not realize that was a sign of making covenant. That was an agreement with each other. It had nothing to do with sexuality. It had everything to do with faithfulness and loyalty as a friend and a brother. And that's a part of the covenant-making ceremony. I wrote a book called The Covenant that analyzes the steps of the covenant-making ceremony. That's one of them. They completely distorted it and sexualized it and gave it a completely false reading.
Well, and don't we get into intellectual quicksand when we divorce the Bible from the culture it came out of, Old Testament and New? It's so imperative to read it in the context of the culture that it came out of. Because if somebody didn't know about that custom of the covenant, then they do leave it up to their own imagination to fill things in.
Absolutely. And then also reading it without a preset agenda of what the reader wants it to say.
But right. It's so common today to read something and not even care what the original intent of the original author was. What does it mean to me today?
Yes.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I think evangelical Christians make the same mistake. How many times have we been to a Bible study and they said, let's have a word of prayer first? Now, that's fine. But I listen to some of these prayers. Oh, Lord, may you open our eyes so that your spirit may illuminate us to the truth that's in your Bible. And all of a sudden, they're assuming that it wasn't already clearly written. And yet if a Mormon came along and said, well, I asked God to illuminate me too, and I found out that Joseph Smith is the true prophet, my view on this is the Bible is spiritual in its origin. It came from God. It's spiritual in its application, because without the Holy Spirit, we cannot apply it to our lives. But reading it, I believe an atheist, a Buddhist, and a Christian could read the same verse and agree as to what it says. They may disagree as to whether they like it. They may disagree as to whether they're going to obey it. They may disagree as to whether they're going to follow it. But they ought to be able to agree as to what it says if they study the culture that this verse came out of.
Absolutely. As I'm sitting here listening to you, the first thoughts going in my mind is I want to have you come speak in my church.
Hey, Sharon, it works. That plan where I give a little sermon.
Awesome.
I'm just honored to be here. You are a brilliant man, and it's so nice to meet you after all these years of hearing these great things about. Let's talk a little bit about Gnosticism, though, because what happens, Jim, is people go, well, the Gospel of Thomas, I mean, he was an apostle too. Why didn't the church include that? Obviously, if the early church thought that the real Thomas had written the Gospel of Thomas or the real Philip had written the Gospel of Philip, they would have put it. But wasn't there this religion called Gnosticism? And wasn't it common in those days when a religion wanted credibility and Christianity was already very famous to scratch the name of an apostle on there? Could you tell us, explain it like you're talking to a third grader? Sharon's in the fourth grade, but explain it like you're talking to a third grader. Sharon just kicked me. This is the disadvantage of being on the radio.
But you reported it, and I'm an eyewitness, so now we have a lawsuit on the air.
I hear they're going to have nudity on the radio next year, and I'm just outraged. Talk about boycott. We got to boycott nudity on the radio. Anyway, Gnosticism. Explain it like you're talking to a third grader. What? This was a religion that in and of itself had a different theology, and then maybe later on why people started trying to mix Gnosticism and Christianity together, because if they don't understand Gnosticism, they're not going to understand these Gospels that they're trying to base the Da Vinci Code on.
Okay, here we go. A third grade approach to it. Gnosticism comes from the word gnosis. Gnosis is a Greek word meaning to know. So if you knew certain things, you were saved. You're not saved from sins by what Jesus did on the cross. You're saved if you know certain things. Well, what are those certain things? They're secrets. Well, what are those secrets? Well, it's like joining a little secret club, and you have layers that if you go a little higher, then you can kind of climb higher in this process. The whole goal was to escape the body so the spirit could be free. Why? Because Gnosticism said that everything that's material, our bodies and everything else in this created order, is innately evil. It's bad. It's not good. So we got to get out of here. And we got a spark within us, a divine spark. We got to get the spirit set free to get away from the body, which is so contrary to the scripture that says about creation, that God, as he created the world, says, "Ooh, that's good, that's good." And he made us, he says, "That's very good." Gnostics said, "No, that's bad, that's very bad." So we got to get out of here. And the way we can escape our bodies and free our spirits, as bizarre as this sounds, is if we know certain secret things. And that's why all the Gnostic, there's a fancy word called Gnostic cosmology. It's a fancy way of saying their whole way of viewing the world is, let's get out of this world, it's bad, and let's escape it. Therefore, Jesus did not have a physical body because the physical body is bad. So there's no incarnation there. Jesus wasn't born as a babe in Bethlehem. God didn't come in human flesh. Nor was there a crucifixion because the body would have been bad. Nor was there a resurrection because the body would have been bad. And that's basically the core of Gnosticism.
Well, that really confuses me in this way, that Dan Brown takes the Gnostic Gospels and says that, you know, in these orgies that he was having.
Yes. Not he was having, but the figures in the book.
Yeah. And if the body is if material and immaterial, one is good and one is bad. But then he says that's how they reach.
Well, yeah, it seems like he's trying to have his cake and eat it too. He talks about these ancient orgy rites where they would worship the sacred feminine, and then he also tries to go to the Gnostic Gospels to imply that Jesus had this relationship with Mary. Wouldn't one of those sources contradict the others? I would think the Gnostics wouldn't have anything to do with some orgy.
They really do. He's talking about two separate movements, and he confuses them, it appears to me. One is the Gnostic movement, because of the Gnostic writings. We haven't even talked about that. The Nag Hammadi discoveries, the Gnostic writings, many of them are distinctly anti-sexual. Mm-hmm. One called the Paraphrase of Sham, the Dialogue of the Savior. A number of them are anti-marriage. But then on the other side, this paganism of the first few centuries, that's in a sense another move. That's simply worship of the earth, Mother Earth, and that one is the much more sexually driven.
Okay, we're going to talk about worship of the earth. We're going to talk about non-sexual to sexual orgies. You heard it here first, folks. We slice, we dice, we do everything. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
You're listening to News Talk 1170, KCBQ.
This is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in three serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burned down. If you wanted a guarantee, you should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, license number 480539. WNS Electric.
Visit KCBQ.com today for special discount offers. Explore the possibilities at Office Pavilion and get $50 off your next seating purchase. Receive a 32-inch flat-screen HDTV when you buy, sell, or refinance your home with Teamwork Mortgage. And no need to remove plants, animals, or furniture to rid your home of termites. Receive $50 off on any service provided by Ecola Termite Services. So visit KCBQ.com today to click and save.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ.
Does your monthly mortgage payment continue to go up because of an adjustable rate loan? Well, many people are feeling the sting of these NEGAM loans. What started out as a seductive rate of 1% has now turned into 6 or 7%. Your monthly payments have doubled, and you now realize that there's nothing to keep it from continuing to rise. If you're stuck in a loan that's hurting you, Teamwork Mortgage can help by refinancing you into an honest, fixed-rate loan starting as low as 5.75%. A fixed rate will help to bring your blood pressure back to normal with a set payment that you can afford. Allow Teamwork Mortgage to find you a loan that works best for your situation. The number is 216-9010. And this month, Teamwork Mortgage will also give you a brand new 32-inch high-definition flat-screen TV at the close of your loan. So call 216-9010 today and see firsthand that nobody works harder for you than Teamwork Mortgage or gives you a flat-screen TV. 619-216-9010. Real Estate Brokers License Number 00989091.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ, San Diego.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. This is Bob Siegel and Sharon Cashard. If you read a book like Galatians, you'll see Paul say that the flesh wages war against the spirit. But there was another religion in those days called Gnosticism, which took those terms, and they meant very different things by them than what the ancient Jews meant. To Paul, the flesh just meant the part of your soul that was sinful, and the spirit meant the part of your soul that was in tune with God. It did not mean that anything physical or pleasurable was evil, but that's what the Gnostics taught, and Gnosticism is part of the basis of the Da Vinci Code. Our special guest today, Jim Garlow, who's written the book Cracking the Da Vinci Code and many other books about the Da Vinci Code. We were in the middle of a discussion about two sources, the Gnosticism, but you were also starting to tell us about this worship of Mother Earth that included all kinds of sexual rites, and somehow Dan Brown, the author of Da Vinci Code, was trying to merge this together.
Yeah, the book has a scene in it called the Hieros Gamos. That actually technically means sacred marriage, but it is an ancient sexual pagan practice. It's an actual liturgical rite of sorts. And many of the ancient religions had that. Even our children, the children of Israel in the Old Testament, were commanded not to participate in the various Canaanite religions or those of, you know, Egyptian rootage that had that kind of a practice. And the Old Testament specifically warns against that kind of participation. So there's this ancient paganism. The word paganism in its simplest form means back to the earth or the soil, or worship of Mother Earth is about the easiest way to say that. We as Christians care about the environment, but we're not environmentalist. There's a huge difference. And so Dan Brown sort of mixes, in a sense, two separate movements.
Okay. Let me ask another question. When Jesus and Mary Magdalene met at the tomb in the Gospel of John, what did Jesus mean when he said to Mary, "Do not hold on to me," or some renderings might say, "Do not cling to me"? Does that imply that she had a marital relationship with him, as I heard somebody on the History Channel recently say? That for Jesus to say, "Do not cling to me," must have meant that they were married.
Boy, the best way to become absent about history is to watch that History Channel.
Oxymoron.
It's like the best way to find God on a campus? Take a religious studies class. That'll bring you closer to God.
No.
No, that has nothing to do with marriage, nothing even implied on marriage in that issue. It has to do with more complexities than what I'm able to take us right now, but that has to do with this phenomenon of him reappearing this is a post-death experience now, and here is a renewed body, and that's why the dialogue was carried on the way it was. Nothing to do with the issue of a wedding or a marriage.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And of course, for them to quote that, they have to admit for a moment that Jesus did resurrect from the dead, which contradicts all these other things about the Da Vinci. Now, let me just add an interesting wrinkle to this, because I don't think I've studied Gnosticism as much as you, so I think you might be able to enlighten me here. But I know that here are the Gnostics saying anything physical and pleasurable is evil. And so one brand of Gnosticism said, we won't do anything pleasurable. We'll take vows of celibacy. And I know that in their own strange way, they became the forerunners of the ascetic movements in the Catholic Church. But I know there was another kind of Gnosticism that said, since it's only your flesh that's sinning, go ahead and sin. Now, hypothetically, I remember reading this in his book because I don't think Dan Brown really knew that much about it. But could he, if he was under the gun, say, oh, well, maybe it was one of these other kinds of Gnostic sects that did go out and express themselves sexually that had something more in common with the ancient Orphic rites?
Well, he could, the point you brought up is a significant one, I think is important. I do know that as you work through the Nag Hammadi text, and we can talk about what those are if you want to in a moment,
mm-hmm, yes.
They really take pretty much an anti-pleasure, somewhat anti-marriage, and certainly several of them anti-sexual stance. So there are clearly two different groups. Think of ancient Greek where you have the Stoics, who are the ascetic types. Then you have the Epicureans. That is
who are into pleasure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Pleasure is the thing.
Right.
And so you're exactly right. There is, and among Gnostics, there is this cadre of people who are sort of the Epicurean version of that. Since it is only the body, do what I want. But that doesn't seem to be the norm coming through in most of the literature that comprises the Nag Hammadi.
Right. And even if they wanted to argue that point, they'd still have to say that they were believing that they were sinning, but it was only their bodies sinning.
Yes.
So even if they were doing it, they certainly weren't calling it sacred. So that probably wouldn't be a good argument for them to use either. But I just thought somebody might try to throw that one as we're having all these discussions in the next few months. And now let's talk about this discovery that was in Egypt where they found a bunch of these writings. That's where Thomas and Philip and the Gospel of Mary were all found. Isn't that correct?
Yeah. Now, if you're listening and saying, I'm not following all this, now bear back in with me here because we're gonna make this very much easier to understand than what we've just been talking about, and it's something you really do need to know. This is really critical. You wouldn't have needed to know about it had Dan Brown not written on it the way he did, but somebody you know and love is going to be moved by this movie to abandon their Christian faith. And if you're prepared to talk about what we're talking about now, this suddenly gets very relevant to your life. And here we go. In 1945, there was a group of Bedouins, about seven Bedouins in Egypt, digging through an old cave, trying to find some fertilizer. And they came across this earthen jar, and they found these ancient fragments. And they were manuscripts. And they actually didn't realize they were valuable at the time. And so the mother of one of them burned some of them that night even to start a fire. But they eventually found their way to Cairo, and then the world discovered these were what's now called the Nag Hammadi discoveries from a town in southern part of Egypt called Nag Hammadi.
Kind of a shame they didn't just use them for fertilizer. It would have saved us a lot of wear and tear.
Ironically, the Bedouin who found them, his name, and I'm not making this up, is Muhammad Ali.
Oh, my goodness.
Of course, there's a lot by
the
name.
I am the greatest. I have found the greatest manuscripts.
I'm seeing another side of you, Bob. I'm not been aware of it. Keep your day job.
Yeah, right. There goes that invitation to speak in his church.
You're right. It's gone. So in 1977, they finally get translated into English. The reason it took so long was the scholars fought over them. They all want them. And so finally, the United Nations, among other organizations, actually stepped in to get them disseminated to authors. And finally, they're put out. There's 45 different, we're going to call them books, or they're called tractates, but little books, and with duplications at 52, that comprise what's called the Nag Hammadi Library. And these, for the first time, let Gnostics speak for themselves. Up to this time, all we knew is what the critics of Gnostics said. Irenaeus, a man writing in 180, a strong Christian, wrote against them, Tertullian and others. Or we know what John wrote in the Bible in 1 John chapter 1, verses 1, 2, 3. And some of Paul's writings hint at this. But bottom line is the first time the Gnostics spoke for themselves. So it was a very significant discovery that took place.
Mm-hmm. And when they spoke, what were they speaking? So this was one of the issues.
Okay, the complexity of Gnosticism, it is really, it's all over the board. The Nag Hammadi texts are not unified in theme at all, but they do take, oftentimes they'll take what is a Christian principle and turn it upside down. For example, we say Cain killed Abel. Well, there's a whole Cainite movement of Gnostics. In other words, they make Cain a good guy.
I see.
They take Sodom and Gomorrah story, make those good stories. They take Judas. Now, that wasn't found in Nag Hammadi, but that's a later discovery in 1977.
And that was also Gnostic.
That was Gnostic, completely. And there's a classic example. In the Gospel of Judas, the conversation with Jesus and Judas is, Jesus is conspiring with Judas to get him, Jesus, killed. Why? To escape this body, so the spirit can be set free. So now Judas becomes a hero. Now, that's distinct Gnostic thinking. Mm-hmm. They'll take the creation account, for example, and turn it upside down. Here's this bungling god. It's kind of a buffoon god in the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve and the serpent. And the serpent's trying to get knowledge. Notice gnosis, knowledge, to Adam and Eve. And God's not letting them to the tree that could give them knowledge. But the serpent helps them, gets them knowledge. And the story ends with a serpent throwing God out of the Garden of Eden. That's mm-hmm. how sick and upside down mm-hmm. and perverted.
I just can't imagine why Hollywood loves this version.
Oh, you can't?
Judas knew Jesus better than the other disciples. He loved them. That's why he had to betray him. In fact, he loved them so much more than Peter. It's absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. Well, we're going to amaze you even more. We're having a great time with Jim Garlett. It is a very serious subject because the Da Vinci Code is going to be huge. The novel already is. The movie's going to go through the charts. We will talk about it more on The Bob Siegel Show.
News Talk 1170 KCBQ.
How many times have you heard the phrase, "they're all the same," applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home? Or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial. Quality work completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Jim Bell, said, "When people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuilt." For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuildInc.com. That's ProBuildInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuilt.
Did you know that with one phone call, your dog can become the perfect dog? Absolute Canine Training can stop all the bad behaviors your dog has learned. If your dog is ruining your backyard, chewing up your furniture, or just plain out of control, it's time to pick up the phone and make that one call that can change your dog's life. 800-889-DOGS. That's 800-889-3647. Absolute Canine Training can teach your dog how to behave in the house, out on walks, and give you the dog of your dreams. 800-889-DOGS. Or on the web at Absolute, the letter K, the number 9.com.
You're listening to News Talk 1170, KCBQ.
Hey, Bill, hold up.
Hey, Bradley, what's up?
Hey, Mary told me that you and Tracy bought cemetery property, and I thought it seemed a little strange. Is everything okay?
Oh, yeah. Tracy had just been bugging me about it ever since her good friend passed away last fall. She just wanted us to get our ducks in a row, just in case anything like that ever happens to us.
Oh?
Yeah, and I gotta tell you, it was nothing like I thought. This Singing Hills Memorial Park is beautiful. There's trees everywhere, a lake with a waterfall, great bronze sculptures, just a real quality place, and very affordable, too.
Wow.
Look, hopefully we won't need it for a long time, but leaving it up to our kids, that just wasn't an option. And now it's all taken care of. They even gave us a free gift card for gas.
Well, thanks, Bill. I think Mary wants us to look into it. And if they're giving away free gas, well, hey.
To set up your visit to Singing Hills Memorial Park, call 444-3000. That's 619-444-3000.
Singing Hills Memorial Park.
News Talk 1170 KCBQ.
Welcome back to News Talk 1170 KCBQ. We're here with our very special guest, Jim Garlow, and we've been talking about The Da Vinci Code, a movie that's going to star Tom Hanks, be directed by Ron Howard. The book is already a bestseller, and as Jim put it so well, somebody that you know is going to either struggle with their faith over this, or perhaps somebody who would have considered Christianity is going to hear this gobbledygook instead, but artistically, it's probably going to be brilliant, so it's going to be very deceptive.
I wanted to ask you a question. We're going to deviate a little bit from Gnosticism, if that's okay. Who are the Knights Templar? And along those lines in particular, is there any historical evidence that the Knights discovered secret documents during the Crusades on the site where Solomon's Temple once stood about Jesus and Mary Magdalene?
Not at all. And that'd be a strange place for it to be hidden in the first place under Solomon's temple. Why on earth would it be there as a complete disconnect? The Knights Templar were grouped to protect people who came down to the Holy Land when there was great open warfare between Christians and Muslims trying to control the Holy Land. And Dan Brown has taken that and made it very grandiose beyond, but that's why they existed.
Jim, when I read the Da Vinci Code a couple of years ago, what stood out to me that would be the greatest appeal is that Christianity has this reputation of being a chauvinistic religion, very anti-female. And what I've tried to do is tell people that the Bible has a much higher view of women than they think. And I know you mentioned some of this in the seminar that I saw you teach last week. Could you comment a little bit about how one can accept the Bible with its canonized writings and realize that it has an extremely high view of women and certainly would have been a very radical high view of women in those days without resorting to all this sacred feminist Mother Earth kind of stuff?
Yeah, why that really ties in with Dan Brown. And Dan Brown goes so strong as to say that the church demonized, the church defamed women, and the church led a smear campaign against women. So he takes not only the position the church was kind of neutral, but it was out to really stamp out women, and to the point that it killed 5 million women during the Middle Ages. He apparently does not grasp the position of the scripture, and then all the way through church history, such women as Deborah, that's lifted up as being an incredible five-star general when the males around her were kind of wimps, Esther, the courageous queen. We go all the way through the Proverbs 31 woman, or Ruth, and Ruth took a kind of courageous step in what she did with Boaz, and then all the way to the New Testament, where it lists in the genealogy of Christ. There's all these men that are always listed in a genealogy, but it diverts five different times and wants to draw in some women. The Samaritan woman, for example, that's the woman to whom Jesus gave the announcement. That's the first time he ever gave the announcement about who he was,
well,
validating her.
And not only that, wasn't it considered a disgrace in those days for a Jew to talk to a woman publicly?
He should not
have even been talking to her.
Yes.
Says speaks volumes.
She was stunned herself. And then on top of that, he should not have been cross-racially.
With
a Samaritan woman should not have been. And then a woman of this reputation. The reason she was at the well, hour of the day she was, that's not the hour the women gathered the water or drew the water. She was there because her reputation was so low, she was probably ostracized from the rest of the women.
It's radical stuff. It shows Jesus marched to the beat of a different drummer, but we would read that once again without the historical context and go, so Jesus asked a woman for a drink. Big deal. That's why understanding
the
mindset in those days, it was a very egalitarian type of position.
One of the translations actually says he must needs go through, this is King James version, he must needs go through Samaria. It's kind of an odd way of phrasing it, but he chose to go through when every other Jew went around Samaria. They didn't go through Samaria because of racial conflict. He chose to go through. That was with great intentionality. On the women's theme, though, even Luke chapter 8 has this incredible verse that a group of women underwrote financially Jesus' ministry. Mm-hmm. That's rarely brought out.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mary Magdalene being the first eyewitness of Christ's resurrection,
right,
the most important event in history.
And even though the Bible's not a chauvinistic book, it did come out of a very patriarchal culture. So doesn't that show the painstaking honesty and integrity of the gospel writers? If they were going to invent this stuff, wouldn't they have had Peter and John be the ones that first found the resurrected Jesus instead of Mary Magdalene and them not believing her at first?
Absolutely.
That shows an awful lot of integrity in their writing.
No woman would have been allowed to have testified in a court of law at that time. And not every culture, frankly, is patriarchal. In other words, men are in charge overwhelmingly, whether we like it or not. That's just a reality of culture. It's a sociological statement. However, that culture was distinctly chauvinistic, and women were not regarded as anything but mere property. And ironically, skipping back to Dan Brown for a moment, the Gnostic text, there's a number of places in the Nag Hammadi text where it actually says the women, in order to enter heaven, must become males. It's a reversal of what
Dan Brown... Right, and the Bible's way ahead of that because it says that in Christ there is neither male nor female, I think referring to status, not meaning that we're going to become androgynous, but they even talked about the inheritance that was given only to the male first born son, and Paul uses that analogy and says you are all sons, but he's already qualified that. You're neither male nor female, you're all sons. So by yes, it's male language, but when he says male and female both have the inheritance of a firstborn son to God, this is just huge stuff. And it's so sad that nobody knows that the Bible is this freeing and liberating and progressive.
And even Peter preaching on the day the church was born, he says, your sons and your daughters.
Absolutely.
And he's quoting Joel chapter 2. That
Absolutely.
Cuts, that flies into the face of the culture. And then Paul referencing Phoebe or Priscilla, and even Priscilla's name appearing before her husband on some occasion, which probably gives an indication that she rose to a higher level of prominence, maybe was a stronger teacher than her husband all the way through the scriptures.
Absolutely.
And even church history. Now where Dan Brown is right on one small count is the early church, some of the early church fathers, that's the people who are writing in the first and second century. Numbers of those said some very derogatory things about females. They're an embarrassment to us. We can't defend them. There's reasons why they do, but I'm not going to try to defend them. And they're really sub-scriptural at that point. They're sub-biblical at that point. But church history has a way of correcting, getting back to the truth, and you look through the rest of the church history, the way in which women are treated, and the fact that women carry such an important role in the scope of church history, which we, if we had time, we could just start listing, and we won't do that now.
Well, and even though you and I wouldn't be into all the Mariology of the Catholic Church, just to defend the Catholic Church again, if they're so anti-feminine, why do they have people actually praying to the Virgin Mary? That shows that the Catholic Church did not necessarily go that direction.
And on top of that, where Dan Brown says that they defamed Mary Magdalene, why, they have named how many churches after her, and she's regarded as a saint. This is just a ludicrous statement about the Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah, it's really a lot of nonsense.
The Priory of Sion was supposedly a secret society where the very existence was to keep the secret of the Holy Grail. And when we came to the pastor's meeting last week that you had talking about this, you mentioned that the Priory of Sion wasn't even formed until the 1956, I think you said?
Yes. Dan Brown says on his opening page, fact, the Priory of Sion was founded in 1099, has the following grand masters, and includes Leonardo da Vinci. It was founded in either 1954 or 1956. 1956 is the year most people believe it was founded. It was founded by three or four guys, and Pierre Plantard in Paris founded this organization, and it was ironically founded for low rent subsidizing for housing. It was a housing lobby group, a tiny one, admittedly, and it was named after a hill in the south of France called Sion, not Zion as in Jerusalem, but Sion the hill. And so that was the formation of it. Then about 1962 to 1965, he and a couple of his buddies decided to create some documents and make them look very antiquated, make them look like they were old, and sneak them into the Bibliothèque Nationale, the National Library of Paris. Mm-hmm. They were called the secret, the dossier secret, the secret letters. And in these letters was this story of Jesus and Mary Magdalene and the daughter Sarah coming to the south of France, and from them came the Merovingian king line. And then, ironically, as you go on these letters, you discover that Pierre Plantard himself was in that lineage, genealogy, so he should have been the king of France.
Mm.
Now, this was discovered
very
in about 1975, the so-called discovered these ancient letters. And, of course, they weren't ancient. They were bogus. He admitted he fabricated. He admitted they were bogus. He even got his wrist slapped in courts at various times for this.
Okay. I want to ask you a little bit about the Da Vinci painting, The Last Supper. And according to Dan Brown, there were some secret messages in there. One is the fact that the person to the right of Jesus was not John, but Mary Magdalene. And do you can you comment on how old John was as a disciple as he was following Jesus? Was he a young man who maybe didn't have a beard yet and maybe did look effeminate?
Well, he had to have been fairly young because, remember, he's still around a long time later. This had to be a fairly youthful guy. It is common among all Renaissance artists to paint young men as effeminate. I can't defend that, but that's just simply the way that they all did.
So they might have painted him without a beard, whether he really had a beard or not.
Possibly, but they certainly saw him as a young man. We need to rely on only what the scripture tells us, as opposed to Leonardo da Vinci, you know, painting in about 1500. They go on and make the case, and Da Vinci Code does, that the formation, not only the fact that it was effeminate, but the fact that the figure to the right of Jesus is leaning away, and that forms he draws a little V,
right,
or sometimes an M, and the V, and he gives it all kinds of sexualized content. Well, you could take every photograph of people and all kinds of angles that are formed and conclude all kinds of things. This is really ludicrous speculation.
Now, speaking of Leonardo da Vinci, this is important because even though we call this the Da Vinci Code, you don't even believe that Leonardo da Vinci was really part of this Priory of Silent anyway.
Oh, no, certainly not. It came too late. It was 1956. And on top of that, Leonardo da Vinci, and by the way, he was always called Leonardo. It always was and still is. So the very fact that Brown calls him Da Vinci is a clue that he didn't quite get a grasp on this. It should have been called the Leonardo
code. The Leonardo code.
Yeah.
It doesn't have quite the same ring to it.
No, it doesn't. And Leonardo never had a code. Dan Brown may have one, but Leonardo doesn't have a code. He'd be going, what, if we were asking this? He left a lot of writings behind about a lot of topics, but there was nothing in his writings at all about him believing that somehow Mary Magdalene and Jesus were married. Yeah, it's not immediately clear to the extent that he embraced Christianity. And he had some feelings also negative about the church, but no indication at all of any of this kind of a code. Just doesn't exist in his writings, and it was a lot of writing left over about an awful lot of topics.
Okay, and here's my big question. If that was Mary Magdalene in the picture, where's John?
Good question. Very good.
Okay. All right. So that settled
it
for me.
You two are both confusing our audience with facts.
John was going to McDonald's to get some hamburgers. There's enough food on the table.
John was being sued because he went to McDonald's.
He got left out of the picture.
Yeah, and caused weight because he didn't know cheeseburgers would help him. Okay, we're going to come back for our last segment. As usual, the time's going far too quickly. But we have Jim Garlow, historian, who will tell you the truth about the Da Vinci Code, which is not the truth you're going to hear when you go to the movie. But we will be right back.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ, San Diego.
Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
A few months ago, I filed for bankruptcy. Now I feel such a sense of relief. It's called a fresh start, and I know why. All my credit card debt and past medical bills have been wiped out to zero. I had the option of keeping my car, so I did. When the phone rings, I know it won't be a creditor. I'm debt-free. The law allowed me a second chance. Call Mark Miller at 619-574-0551. He's an attorney in Old Town San Diego. Or check out his webpage at debtwipeout.com. Everyone deserves a fresh start.
Call the Law Office of Mark L. Miller. They're a federally recognized debt relief agency, and they've helped thousands of San Diegans wipe out their debt by filing for bankruptcy. Call 619-574-0551, 619-574-0551, or on the web at debtwipeout.com. The Law Office of Mark L. Miller, 619-574-0551.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ.
Now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. We're here with Jim Garlow, who wrote the book Cracking the Da Vinci Code. Jim, we're down to our last segment of the program, a briefer one, and we'll probably be right in the middle of something juicy when we have to sign off. So let me at this time thank you so much. I know how busy you are. I know you've been doing these interviews all over the country. We are so honored to have you here. You're a fantastic scholar and a great person, and thank you very much for being here.
Well, honored to be on. I don't consider myself a good scholar. I try to be a good student. But thank you. It's an honor to be on with you.
I think any scholar worth his salt would probably have the humility to say that. So I stand by my opinion. Now, what do you want people to know that we haven't asked you? As we go to these last few minutes, what would be an important thing that you want to leave our audience with?
Two numbers, 6 and 4. 6 things every believer ought to know about the Da Vinci Code. And then 4 things in terms of a 4-pronged strategy for every local church. Here we go on the 6 things. We've covered some of them, but this is kind of an overview. Number 1, they need to know about Dan Brown's portrayal of the church's understanding of women. Number 2, Dan Brown's portrayal of the church's understanding of sexuality. He says the church demonizes sex. Number 3, his understanding of Jesus. He says Jesus wasn't considered divine till the 4th century and that Jesus was married. We've talked about those a little bit. The next one would be his understanding of the definition or nature of the church. We don't have time to go into that one right now. The next one would be his understanding of how the New Testament came together. And the last one is his definition of God. Now, every one of those are very knowable by your listeners if they'll invest just a little bit of time. This is not rocket science. It does require some repetition and study, but it's not rocket science. And what should every church, local church, do? I think number 1 is the resource phase. Phase 1 is get the resources. I encourage people to go ahead and read Dan Brown's book so we know the language the world is speaking right now. We got to know their language.
They should probably read it before the movie comes out, too, to be better prepared.
I think that'd be advisable. I tell people to borrow his book, but buy mine.
There you go. That's That sounds
very
good.
Well put.
Okay. And then pick up my books because I co-author with Peter Jones. I have Cracking Da Vinci's Code is one, and that will walk through the six things. And then the Da Vinci Code Breaker, which is a dictionary of over 500 terms related to the Da Vinci Code. That's phase one.
Can I interrupt and sure. ask one thing? In your books, do you go in much detail about each one of those six things that you just
yes,
mentioned?
Yes,
okay.
Very much good. So. And they can get the books any bookstore, or they can go online, jimgarlow.com. You may have other places you want to tell them to go to, but jimgarlow.com, they can get them there as well.
And which book in particular has those 6 points that you just mentioned?
The 6 points will be covered in Cracking Da Vinci's Code. It's scattered across 10 different chapters, but Cracking Da Vinci's Code will cover all six of these
okay.
arenas.
Mm-hmm.
One of the points you talked about was the early church's view of the Bible. I remember in the Da Vinci Code, they claimed that Emperor Constantine picked which books would go in the Bible. Wasn't he confusing the Council of Nicaea with the Council of Chalcedon? I mean, Constantine was
yes.
dead when they decided which books. What a blatant, gross error of history.
The Council of Nicaea in 325 had nothing to do with what went
That was
in the
about
New
the Trinity.
And he actually, exactly. And he actually said that Constantine commissioned and financed a new Bible. He had nothing to do with that at all.
And he really didn't care about the Council of Nicaea either, other than he was saying, you guys settle this. I don't
yes.
care how you settle it. Settle it.
Okay, wait a minute, you guys. Last 4 points.
Okay, okay. Well, the first one was the resource phase. Get the resources. In phase two, I call it the preparation phase. Go through and learn those six key things. And there's a free Bible study downloadable from my website. It's called Preparing for Da Vinci. And it's jimgarlow.com, G-A-R-L-O-W, jimgarlow.com. And then the third phase is my recommendation is to go to a movie with an unbeliever. Unchurched person, a seeker. So when you walk out of the movie, you engage in the conversation. They'll say something like this, wow, I didn't know Jesus was married.
Mm-hmm.
And you can say, well, that's an interesting concept. Don't start arguing with them. Come to my house. Let's have Da Vinci Code parties. Bring your friends. Bring your Da Vinci Code book. That's phase four, and that's the discovery phase. Launch, ideally, 4 weeks of study. I have exactly listed on that downloadable Bible study what to do each of those 4 weeks. They do the same thing in phase two with a group of believers preparing for the movie as they do in phase four with a group of hopefully unbelievers after the movie, leading them into an understanding of who Jesus was and how reliable our New Testament truly is. So even the discussion questions, what to read, what materials to purchase, how to get them, it's all listed on that downloadable Bible study.
Now, we know some of you like to go to the movies with unbelievers anyway for other reasons. We've given you a legitimate reason to go to the movies with an unbeliever, so we hope you're taking this to heart. Jim, thank you so much. We'll see you next week, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Bob Siegel Show. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton, helping infertile families have children. Tom Pinkerton would like to invite you to help Bob expand his radio program by donations or sponsorship. For more information about Bob's ministry, go to www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you can read Bob's articles and get information about Bob's books. That's Bob Siegel, SIEGEL.net.